Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And it has been a incredibly long week, although you mightn't know that listening to our podcast, because our most recent podcast got uploaded very, very, very late. All apologies for that, especially given it was the first session that we'd done after Google dropped its core update on August 15th. But we're back on track now. We're back on schedule, and this podcast recorded again live to tape on the 29th should be up awfully quick, and that's a good thing because we're still talking about the August 2024 core update, which is still rolling out. And while too soon to say anything actually definitive, there's promises, there's glimpses of hope. People, especially publishers who were mashed by the helpful content update almost like an entire year ago, and others who might have been moshed around back in March, there's signs of recovery. Like that's for real. They can have hope, right?
Yeah, I hope they can have hope. We know the core update, John has told us to wait until it's done rolling out before we assume anything. Normally by now you would know for sure, like, hey, you got the rise, it's going to hold, but we don't know that for sure. Some people had reversals this week. So hopefully, also these are visibility reports, not actual traffic reports. Those can sometimes be a little misleading, although the hockey sticks are pretty definite. They're like huge. And if you don't do recovery, a hockey stick may not be familiar to you, but that's when you get back all your traffic and you get this massive spike in Google. So I would say, though, on the ones I've been working on, I've seen recoveries for March, April, mostly. I've not seen much in the way of last year. But the ones I'm looking at are core updates from last year, not helpful content. So it could be they're working this in steps. You know, they did some recoveries from March, April, and now they're working backwards into the ones from last year.
Yeah, there's a lot to unravel that I think has taken place over the last year. And it's sometimes hard to tell what Google is trying to do as they, you know, make different decisions, promote different parts of their algorithm, demote obviously really good sites in the promotion of less than really good information. But we're here now, and this is actually a fairly exciting time. Google announced the, Google released what's called Google Gems. It's AI expert service. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. We're going to talk again a little bit more about stuff that's happening during the core update and stuff that, you know, people at Google have been talking about in the last week. There's a lot happening in the AI world, but to start, if you're tracking web pages or URLs through Merchant Center, you might notice some shakeups in the URLs that were ranking well and ones that have a new code that have suddenly replaced them. Christine, this story just came up, but there's a tracking code that is a query string code that Google's appending to some Merchant Center accounts. What's up with this weirdness?
Okay, so first, so you know, it's not, so people know it's not related to the core update whatsoever. If you see decrease in rankings for items that you have in the merchant center, it's possible it's this SRS LT ID query parameter that's being attached to your URLs. So these URLs are used to track things from merchant center. They show up especially in e-commerce stores like in Shopify. They also show up though in Semrush and tracking tools like Google Analytics. So we were alerted to this by our sponsor, Tom Russling, last night because he owns the tool Audience Key, which tracks your keywords and your page mappings. And they have discovered that most of the tools, what they do is they treat this as a completely new URL when it has the appended parameter. And so your main root URL will look like it lost traffic, while these appended URLs will come into your analytics tracking, whichever one you're using, Merchant Center, Shopify, GA, whatever it happens to be. And it will take data away from the original root URL. So Audience Key believes they have a way to solve this. He was going to come on the show today and talk to us about it, but he, being the CEO, got very, very busy today and was not able to. So if you are seeing a decrease in items that are in Merchant Center, know that you want to look for this query parameter. Query parameter just means a question mark, CRS IT, I mean LT ID, CRS LT ID, and see if that's on your URLs and try to merge that traffic. Also, Audience Keys clean this up so you can also check into them to see if you can get your stuff set up there. It's pretty inexpensive to track this while Google fixes it, because right now this is not anything you can fix. There's nothing you can do about it. It should not be affecting your actual rankings. It's splitting the data for the URL
So,
between the main URL and all the parameter URLs.
the main URL, abcd.com, got 100. They got 100 visitors in your old analytics, but now it's gone down to no visitors. But
No, that's last
abcd.com/srslti.
question
Oh,
mark.
I'm sorry. Question mark. Query string. It got 10 visitors, and another one got 6 visitors, and another similar one got 4
Yeah.
visitors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you actually still got 100 visitors, but they've all been sliced and diced based on the query string assigned to them.
Yeah, because it's not respecting the canonical for these. Because you, if you have variants in your own e-commerce site, you will have a parameter variance. You usually have a canonical that it goes back to, which is just the root URL. But this is Google Merchant Center appended parameters that nobody's supposed to see, nor are they supposed to be involved in being tracked. So they're not being treated that way. So they're being treated as their own unique URLs. So if you have 100 variants of a product, you might have 100 of these if they're all in Merchant Center.
The two salient points here are, you haven't lost traffic or rankings or anything, and it has nothing to do with any volatility you might see in your rankings. It has nothing to do with the core update. Two
Yes,
salient messages there.
and like we said, Tom believes they have a solution, so you might check Audience Key out and just use it, as a confirmation. Are they good there? Because now your root is the only place the traffic is going to be seen, or is it not? If it's not, then you might have a core update problem or another issue. But generally speaking, if it's e-commerce in the Merchant Center and you see these parameter IDs, your traffic's being split up among the pages.
It's awful when stuff like this happens because it creates like an analytics and it creates a big hole in your judgment. It's a nightmare. You have to, instead of just glancing and understanding, you actually have to hunt and peck and, do the math to put stuff together. And it takes so much time.
Yeah, and you might not even know this is why you're down, because there's not a lot about this yet. And I don't think Google's been very public about it.
Well, there's an
Because
outage. It just kind of reminds me of the outage that's happening at Google Analytics right now, and it's been going on. Google Analytics may or may not be gathering data properly. It's been going on for a few hours, and not a lot of discussion about it because apparently not a lot of people are noticing.
yeah. I think I know where that is.
So,
That's
if the
a
six or seven people using Google Analytics for, if your data seems wonky, that's because it may well be wonky. If you go look at it, you might notice. I haven't looked, so I don't know. I think most people could say the same too, by the way.
Yeah, I saw a long thread in a private group yesterday about how none of their clients are using GA anymore. They don't even look at it. So it's pretty bad.
You know, in a lot of ways, I think that's unfortunate because there's actually some good stuff in GA4 if you go looking for it and if you put the work in to train GA4. If you go even further and integrate it with tools from Looker Studio, you get someone like Alan Connect to work on your analytics stack, then GA4 is actually incredibly useful. But out of the box, it sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, most people just, if they have the money to have the people that could use GA4, they're moving mostly, from what I hear, over to Adobe. Because that's more helpful for them, and it doesn't require that they have a data analyst who can set up Looker Studio. Yeah, so that's where we're at. So yeah, so I think a lot of people haven't noticed because really a lot of people aren't using it. So
just to recap the last couple of weeks, we had a rankings complete glitch. Something was screwy with Google Search Console for a couple of hours, and now we have the Google Analytics 4. Your data is probably going to catch up with itself, but it may not be recording its data properly right now. Problem. Maybe the core update will help fix these issues too. Yeah, maybe. Why not? We can be hopeful. We're optimists by nature.
We're not
right?
related in any way, but
no, and it could be a whole system update too. Like, oh, you know, yeah, they're, yeah, remember, they're layering these things on top of each other.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, moving along. Last week we talked about governments, state and federal levels actually trying to regulate the development and the trajectory of AI. And I don't know, I think the concept got a hopeful but kind of skeptic reception in our conversation, Christine. But this seems a little more straightforward. OpenAI and Anthropic have both agreed to allow the U.S. government to access new AI models before they're released in order to judge them and help improve their safety.
Yeah, they have. And they've also entered into the White House's work to secure voluntary commitments from these companies. So right now it's OpenAI, Anthropic, and I also believe, no, that's a different, they signed a different document. Anyway, I thought it was Microsoft, but it's OpenAI and Anthropic. It does seem, though, that the California law that passed Wednesday pretty much is kind of the agent of change here, since they're getting state-level possible regulations. Now they're more willing to work with the federal government. So we'll see. But I think it's a good step forward because the U.S. AI Safety Institute director, Elizabeth Kelly, from an article from The Verge, has talked about the fact that it's just the start, but it's an important milestone as we work to help responsibly steward the future of AI. So I like to see that government and companies are now coming together and agreeing to do things to help secure the safety of these products. So I think it's good.
One, I think it's a watermark. I think it's like almost the most low level way of noting a product is generated by AI is by putting some mark in it. And three giants, OpenAI, Microsoft, and Adobe, have all agreed to back AB 3211, which is basically California's You Gotta Watermark It bill.
Yeah, must be added to the metadata of photos, videos, and audio recordings. This is according to Informatica. Audio recordings that were created with AI. So, I read a recent article, and unfortunately, I could not find it for today, but the watermarking is getting very good, and it's almost impossible to remove it. So, when I originally started doing the watermarking, simply like you and me screenshotting it and changing it, that would I'll throw it out the window. Screenshots still might throw it out the window, but the changes to it will not. So, as you change it, you can't remove the watermarking. and it doesn't get rid of the watermarking. So I think that's good because it allows companies like Google and Bing and Adobe and all those to let you know it's AI when you go to use the image. Also let people know in search if it's a deepfake. Which will become very important in the next 78 days.
Oh, veracity of information is going to become one of the most important cornerstones of the new web as we move into the AI era. And I think, as you said, people can do a screenshot and get around having a watermark on an AI-generated image. But I think that our systems are going to become so sophisticated with the application of AI in everything that in the near future, studying metadata before looking at an image will become second nature because our AI assistants will do that for us. And if the metadata doesn't check out, the content may be on that. We take it seriously, or maybe we don't take it seriously spectrum.
Well, so we know in the law, they have to watermark it, mm-hmm. provide tools to verify watermarks, mm-hmm. and a workable notification and reporting system that will report AI-generated images that aren't being labeled.
Well, again, hopefully watermarking becomes a foundational level of the new media literacy. And again, I'm assuming that that new media literacy is going to be partially facilitated by AI everywhere. Because that's just how we do stuff, right?
And I also think it can help with labeling. I think people can also start to identify, because right now, if you put up a fake image, one of the first things people look for, people who have no tech experience whatsoever,
what is a fifth finger.
Right. They look for a finger or hands being really messed up. Mm-hmm. So by people knowing this about AI imagery, it helps them identify it also themselves to be suspect from the beginning to double check it. So I think that as we have these identifications for watermarking and they like Google search images over time, your brain just starts to notice patterns. We're really good at patterns, our brains. And it'll be like, well, this looks kind of funky. That skin's really shiny, or there's a fifth finger, or that background doesn't seem right. Maybe I should check it out. Yeah. I don't think it'll be going wrong. I don't think it'll be perfect. I just think it will help train people to be better to identify it for media literacy purposes.
Oh, I very much hope so. I very, very, very much hope so. But again, I got a feeling that if it doesn't have the watermark, the image itself won't check out in our what's going to become newfangled veracity systems, we'll call them. Okay, here's a story that really weirded me out. I have no idea how in this universe, well, maybe in the universe we're moving into in 2024. And again, this isn't a tech story, really, but it is because it's the environment that we work in. And it's an important story because you can't be throwing this kind of threat around. But Donald Trump has threatened to throw Mark Zuckerberg in prison for life because he reckons that Meta's chief executive plotted against him. Well, okay, so Meta suppressed claims that the 2020 election was stolen. And after January 6th happened, Meta absolutely clamped down on mega content and kicked Donald Trump and his team off the platform, even though Donald Trump was still technically the sitting president. But yeah, he clamped down on all the misinformation around
wasn't for nothing,
quote unquote, stolen election. Yeah. And so Donald Trump is claiming that this was Zuckerberg plotting against him. And has now said if Zuckerberg continues to plot against him moving in towards this election, he will be jailed for life.
Yes.
He
said in July, this is not the today thing, but it's related. Election fraudsters at levels never seen before, and they will be sent to prison for long periods of time. Yeah, we already know who you are. Don't do it. Zuckerbucks, be careful. So that was in July, and then now he's come out and just said he would just blatantly jail him. We know he had threatened him before because we reported on it. This is important because if you take the politics out of it, disinformation can be very harmful, like during COVID, telling people not to get vaccines because it would kill you. We know scientifically 100% that's not what happens.
Well, we also know historically because it didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. Got you. But so there's disinformation, and then there's like political suppression. These are not the same things, but they've been conflated. So after around the election being rigged, there is 60 court cases that failed to overturn. There are no
Oh, and
court
indeed,
cases that
in,
found
on our
fraudulent.
airwaves, we accept that the there was not a stolen election in 2020.
Yes.
We accept that. We do accept that it was in fact Trump and his team who tried to stage a coup on January 6th. These are facts.
Yes,
That's
and
how it
we do
is.
know from Trump's daughter's own reporting that he doesn't believe the election was stolen. So, we know he talked to people in his administration. They know he didn't think it's stolen, but he's coming after Zuckerberg for his narrative, and he believes that Zuckerberg should not have been able to suppress that. But he's not the government, so there's no 1A first day protection, and he is a company that is supposed to protect its users from disinformation. Something he's stepping away from right now, probably because of some of what's happened here. But they're allowed to do whatever they want. They could decide they don't like Burton Ernie content and never show it again. There's an artist I like. His name is Ren. One of his songs was delisted on every service yesterday. We don't know why yet. So, but they're private companies and they're allowed to do that. So as long as it's not for reasons of like protection, like we did it because the person is person of color or a woman or
Much
something
in
of
the
that
same
nature.
way that Elon Musk is allowed to ban the word cisgender
Yes,
just for the sake of it because he dislikes that word.
exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah. So
Land
the
of the free.
suppression, and the suppression wasn't the government coming in saying you must take this down. They worked with them to hopefully remove disinformation during COVID to protect people from harm, and from January 6th to protect people from harm. So that's the gist of it.
So
But it is.
Donald Trump's threat came in the advance of a book that's going to be released this week. It's election season, so
And by the
there's a
way,
Trump book out.
if Trump was president and he arrested Mark Zuckerberg for the things that he says he did, which weren't illegal, then that would be violation of the 1A, because he's the government punishing someone for their first speech, for their First Amendment rights, free speech. So, just a little twist on that story there.
So, in that same vein, Twixter, X has made changes to a AI chatbot. It's AI chatbot after five secretaries of state warned it was spreading election misinformation to the public. Michigan, Minnesota, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, and Washington's AGs, I'm sorry, secretaries of state, all sent letters to X, Elon Musk, complaining that Grok was going out and BSing about state ballot deadlines shortly after Joe Biden dropped out of the 2024 race.
So the actual letter they wrote specifies some of the things that they were writing, came together and asked him to remove the spot for. And that was things like false information on ballot deadlines, telling people in certain states that their election dates were other than they are. This is actually illegal also in the United States. You can't do that. You can't try to tell people the election date is on November 7th, but it was on the 5th. So I think the secretaries of state here definitely made the right call. It's good to see him stepping down from this because we know he often doesn't. The bot now will tell you to go to vote.gov to check out election information, which is good. Vote.gov is a very legitimate neutral website that just tells people how to find their elections, how to register to vote, how their ballots work, things like that.
Okay, and sort of kind of in the same vein, a Brazilian Supreme Court Wednesday ordered Musk to basically pony up with legal representation in Brazil, get into court within 24 hours, or Brazil is going to suspend Twixter or X service in that country. This is over a legal disagreement Musk is having with the nation state of Brazil, in which he has, I'm sorry, in which he says Brazil has threatened his legal representatives.
Well, they
Confused
have.
you won't be after this episode of Soap.
That's so funny. So basically, it's similar, but it's another country, right? So disinformation was flourishing. They told him he had to, respect the laws of their country. He pulled out all his employees, shut down his operations, and said no. And they said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. So that's where we're at. the too long didn't read version. So it's a disinformation thing, but it's a different country. And he is doing what he normally does, which is tell them that it's freedom of speech. And even though it's a different country, it doesn't have a 1A, he will not follow their censorship orders, in quotes. So, the service would remain available for users in Brazil until this is decided in the next, well, today. Say next 24 hours, but today.
The judge said 24 hours, so it better be decided quick.
yeah. So if you're in Brazil, you may not, or if you advertise to people in Brazil or you handle accounts in Brazil, there may be no more X in Brazil. The judge sounds pretty definite that they will shut it down if he doesn't do what they say.
Okay,
and
so
he doesn't sound like he's going to do it.
It's a pattern of behavior thing.
Yes.
That's sort of kind of what I'm getting at. Just mind blowing. Okay, I want to jump ahead a little bit in our story grid, because I'm just bubbling over with what I think is actually the biggest story of the day.
Yeah, I agree.
Google has released what it's calling Gemini Gems. But by the way, before we go any further, if anybody out there is wincing, do not let engineers name stuff.
No, true. But I thought you were doing a different story.
Gems. Okay, so no. This is huge. Whether this works or not, whether this becomes the dominant way that chatbots are used to interface with the greater internet and with the public, I don't know. But it's the first time any of the big houses has made such a bold move around the use and definition of chatbots.
But before we get into that real quick, we should tell people that Gemini under Gems will allow you to create AI generated pictures of people again.
This is where we're going. Gemini under Gems is going to let you do a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, including allowing you to do pictures of people. Although within really strict guidelines, incredibly strict guidelines.
Yes, if we remember the last time they were letting slaves be Nazis, it was a very bad scene.
Yes, so, yeah. Well, yeah. SpongeBob brown shirt was really disturbing.
Yeah, not good at all.
Okay, so Gemini Gems. I can't get over how badly
named this is. For those who don't know why
is.
We're laughing, there's something in SEO called hidden gems, which is surfacing Reddit and Quora and user-generated content in search results, which has nothing to do with Gemini Gems.
Well,
and Gemini is their AI model. So they're not related in any way, except that they're
not
too, Google.
But I'm laughing because I took my instruction in English classes quite seriously, and you are really careful with your use of words. And okay, so Gemini Gems, and Gem is clearly a contraction of Gemini, in this case, gems are little AI experts you're going to be able to create inside of this Google, I'll call it an agent box for want of a better term. Google's created a space in which you can create and train AI chatbots to be your expert, be it your workout instructor, your art instructor, your writing, your co-writer, or as Roger Monty was speculating in Search Engine Journal earlier, your SEO coach. Google is handling information and its AI's interface with information differently than OpenAI, Anthropic, and other AI.
But OpenAI GPT-3 has had the ability to create expert chatbots.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be differently handled and presented, and the UI is different, but it's not a new concept.
No, but again, the way Google is packaging it and releasing it is a new concept. And Google is openly saying, we are letting you, the home user, create your expert. which is, I think, difficult and somewhat misleading language. But the intent of what Google's doing with Gems, with Gemini Gem, is quite clear. In the long run, this is about replacing huge classes of expertise with information gleaned by AI.
So the three areas that Google right now is saying it's promoting is coding assistance, career planning, and content. I can't get past the fact that all this is based on large language models and ChatGPT's coding information is wrong 52% of the time. So I don't know that these are great ideas. They sound great when you read about them. It's like, with Gems, you can create a team of experts to help you think through a challenging project, brainstorm ideas for an upcoming event, or write the perfect caption for a social media post. Your Gem can also remember detailed set of instructions to help you save time on tedious, repetitive, and difficult tasks. Except we know that that people who write ads with AI have much lower conversion rates on their ads. We know people don't generally like the thought of using AI. We know that code is often incorrect. We know that it's a large language model, so it's often incorrect. Gluing your pizza, your cheese on your pizza, and drinking your urine for kidney stones. So I feel like there's all this rush to make some sort of product that people will use that's useful to them, because right now they don't have that, and that's why the market is looking for a big pivot and course correction. But at the same time, is this really going to be a good thing? Because the hallucination thing has not been solved. It's a feature, and I have a great explanation as to why today.
I think good or bad's irrelevant. I think if
oh,
it,
I don't
if
at
it,
all.
I absolutely do. It's going to happen, whether it's good or bad. Will it be sustained over a long period of time? I don't know. What damage will it do in the meantime?
That's what
I
mean by
know.
Good or bad. Yeah.
But it's going to happen, and even if when Google Plus shut down, the idea of social networks like LinkedIn, Facebook, and others persisted. They continued. Even if Google Gems doesn't work, somebody is going to take this model and this idea, and tomorrow they're going to react to it. Maybe they'll do it better than Google does it.
The market will definitely determine which way this goes, because if people don't use them, like currently they're not really using anything that's out there. That's why Goldman Sachs put out a report to stop investing in large language models, because they're too expensive and they're too erroneous.
Well,
you're right. Yeah,
there's no cost recovery for the investors is the problem.
No,
people are using the AI models; they're using them all over the place, but there's no cost recovery. It's just
it's too cheap to use AI. It's too cheap to use it for us and too expensive for them.
Yeah,
but here's the thing. So I saw this excellent video yesterday on why hallucinations happen so much, and it's a really simple explanation. How many R's are in strawberry?
Several.
Three, right?
Sure. Yeah, strawberry.
D-E-R.
Exactly.
Yeah,
three.
Strawberry. You're not looking at it, so you have to spell it in your head. I get that. That's no problem. So every model gets this wrong. They say two. They do not say three, because every letter is a token with a different mathematical number. Now the R's and R's that are next to each other are given the same token, so it knows there are two. But the R in the beginning of the word doesn't get the same token. It's a different one. So then that gets a different token, so it doesn't know it's the same as the others, because it can't read R's. It doesn't read context. It doesn't know words. It knows the tokens that it puts together to create small shingles of words or to do individual letters. And so the reason it gets it wrong and why it's a feature, not a bug, and almost impossible to correct right now, is it doesn't know the R and the other two are related in any way, because they're two different mathematical numbers. Isn't that cool? That's such a cool explanation I saw yesterday. It was from an AI academic at a university.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so you can't fix that problem. So like trying to throw products on these that people are gonna use, great, it'd be awesome. I could do all this, I could just code. I could tell you I saw an AI guy from IBM. I just tell it to make these borders thicker and it does the HTML, all that's great, until it doesn't work or it's wrong or it's very important. Something really needed
so
good information on and you don't get it. So do users keep using it? That will be the big question.
Well, here's what I think managers are looking at. If it does the work of 10 people and is wrong one out of 10 times, I need 9 less people. All I need is somebody is one person to police the output
True.
and to edit it and to check it. I almost don't think that the hallucinations matter because the cost savings for the user, not for the proprietor, not for Google itself, but Google's looking very, very, very long run. And what happens when this gets integrated into everything, when it becomes people's lifestyle, lifestyle manager.
See, that's where I disagree, though. It is important to the person. They just don't know it yet. So, like, I don't use these things because I don't want to sit there and spend all day trying to figure out if it's right or wrong. Most coders stopped using ChatGPT, like real coders that I see on, like, social, stopped using it because it's wrong so much. They spend so much time debugging the code that it's not worth it to them anymore. So over time, there is a cruft buildup of, is the incorrectness a problem for your life? Now, if you're just talking about planning a trip, maybe not. But if you're talking about things essential to your life, to your money, your life situations, let's bring SEO into it, then it can become very problematic that you're getting bad information, even if it's 20% of the time or 10%, although it's much higher, usually 30 to 40%. So I think that there's this rush to make a product that people like gobble up, like, I like my Whoppers or something, not burgers, little candies. But, once it's wrong all the time, once it gives you like, food poisoning enough times, do you still use it? I don't know. So I guess we'll see. But I do think that's the danger in these things is they're trying to rush them out to market because they need something that will make money because these things cost so much money to make. And if people don't understand how much money, let's just put it into one little instance to continue to do what they're doing. Microsoft is going to have to create nuclear power plants to power these. So that's a lot of money. With no viable product to regain the money, as you were just talking about right now.
But it's really good for nuclear engineers.
True, very good for and probably very good for green energy.
Absolutely.
Just, can you maintain a product that requires you to build nuclear power plants to power it?
Well, for what it's worth, at least half of this show is being powered by nuclear energy. Toronto is powered by nuclear energy.
My area is mostly powered by solar.
This show is almost entirely produced by renewable energy. We'll take our tax credits today. Thank you. In small unmarked bills left under a bench by that big dome thing they got in Las Vegas.
Oh, that thing is so cool.
Preferably.
Hold this here.
Okay, so again, the thing that I think I find most interesting about this story is it's the first of what I think we're going to see is a lot of really audacious announcements coming in the coming months from large tech houses. And after Google's completely craptastic, disastrous rollout in May, I'm pretty sure they will have double checked or triple checked. And if they haven't, then they are the most careless C-level in modern tech history.
Yeah, I'm thinking Sundar goes under careless or intentional at this point. I don't know. He's done a lot of moves that no CEO would normally do in a healthy company. So we'll see. So, by the way, I did think that the biggest story that we missed that you were going to talk about, not to change you, was Yelp is going after Google for its antitrust.
Indeed. Well, Google has antitrust problems. this just keeps adding upon itself. Yes. Google's own practices and their own lawyers' practices are being like raked across the carpet by judges in this case. But yeah, Yelp is like, hey, Google hogs all the space in this review sector. They get to decide who gets shown and who doesn't get shown. You know what's really funny about this? This is my Yelp lawyer voice. You know what's really funny about this?
What's that?
I just picked up a new florist client just recently, and I compiled a list of search results that are relevant for, that apply to keywords that are relevant for their specific florist shop in the specific location they're in, and they scored really well in organic search in Yelp reviews. Quite frequently, I only found this florist, their brand new client, I only found them because they were mentioned in a Yelp review that was placing extremely well in Google's organic search. What was Yelp's problem?
They don't have a problem with that. They don't have a problem with that. They have a problem with Google preferencing itself over Yelp. That's what they're suing on. And they're not, I mean, we know from the other cases, even in the EU, that they have been found guilty of doing that in court. So for Yelp, they might have a leg to stand on here, although Yelp has its own issues being gatekeepers themselves. But so we'll see. But they are suing, and they're basing it on the DOJ antitrust case that's already been decided against Google. So Yelp might have a leg to stand on where they wouldn't have had a leg to stand on before had Google not lost this case. So we'll see. And we don't even know what's going to happen to Google yet, because Judge Mehta, that's so funny, it's Mehta, M-E-H-T-A though, hasn't given the punishment yet, hasn't handed down the hammer.
Well, we know that however things come down for Google, they have not just Judge Mehta. There's a panel of judges that are all hearing, there's a gajillion different motions that are flying around the courts while this case works itself out. And one of them questioned Google's counsel's actions. And in, so Judge Leonie Brinkema, in pretrial motion hearings, flips on Google, criticizing Google for the way they handled information, privileged information, called the company's action absolutely inappropriate and not proper, and singled out Google's a memo in 2008 by Google's then chief counsel, Kent Walker, called, appropriately named, the Walker Memo. It should be the music, the Walker Memo.
Dun, 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 dun.
Who created a communications policy that is tailored to pretty much bury critically important information, and in some cases automatically delete critically important information.
You know what they call this mode?
Bury evidence. They call it Vegas mode.
They call it the Vegas mode. Which I don't understand what that has to do with destroying evidence.
You bury the evidence deep where nobody will find it, like the desert. It's Vegas mode.
You know, we won't get into this, but I did search and rescue for a year, and you don't bury people in the desert.
No, you dump them in Lake Mead.
Yeah, they mummify, and then all the evidence is preserved. But anyway, I get now what you're saying, Vegas mode. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know if people caught this, is the ad tech antitrust trial, the separate one. It's the other antitrust trial.
Yeah, that's the one that's coming up like this week or next. It's supposed to, but again, they got all these motions flying around. It's going to take forever to figure this stuff out.
Yeah, and then once it's found out, there'd also be the appeals and stuff. But the court singled out the so-called Walker memo containing what's referred to as incredible smoking guns as evidence of potential wrongdoing. That is not good coming from your judge.
So, yeah, I think... So a couple weeks ago, there was speculation from the other antitrust case that, you know, Google might see different pieces of its business, Alphabet Corporation might see different bits of the alphabet severed from each other. A, B, D, E, H, I, J, you know. It's a different action, it's a different case, and it'll have a different decision and completely different outcome.
Right. And Google still does rely for its revenue at Alphabet, not just Google, 85% on its ads. So changes to its ad business could be absolutely devastating.
Well, again, don't forget, Google has several different types of ad business.
They do.
The two big ones are the PPC ads, AdWords, and the display ads, DoubleClick Media.
The EU is going after both. They think they should be separated from Google completely.
Truly incredible.
They've already found them to be an antitrust. Yeah, they've already found them to be a monopoly. That was up last year, I believe. So anyway, we'll see what happens. It's going to be a year of changes for Google. It is odd to me, and I don't have any reason. You know, I'm not trying to draw any conclusions because I do not know why. But Google has successfully mounted, they have the largest lobbyist group in DC for most of its existence to avoid these kind of cases. And suddenly, not only they're not avoiding them, but they are losing them. So it's kind of interesting to see. Also,
Here's
partially,
the
the
here's
DOJ is really prosecuting them now, too, when they haven't in the past.
well, this it's not about feeling like prosecuting them. I part of my work has me spending time working with government, and again, it's a completely different regulatory scenario than the United States, but it takes a long time to get things done legally. It takes
It
a
does,
very long
yeah.
time to get things done legally, and it's not a reluctance to prosecute as much as it is a you've got to gather a crap ton of evidence, and just because somebody says so doesn't mean that the government can react, and government does not want to mess with business.
And
Like
there's, and there's,
business has to do business.
yeah, there's a 1,000%, and that is 1,000% actually probably has a lot to do why it hasn't come to fruition before. But DOJ, the head of this particular group, does have a specific stated mission to go after a monopoly because they've become too big. And I don't disagree. So there's both.
That you
There's
reminded me
both
of the point I
there.
was going to make. This is, lobbyists can't change law. What they
No, they
can
can
do is
help
put
pressure people.
stuff off. They can introduce hurdles. They can introduce questions. They can make you hold hearings. But eventually, you run out of. They run out. You run out of runway. There's nothing left, and then the repercussions happen.
And we know that Nation State and Nation State, sorry, Live Nation and Ticketmaster have been told they have to break up, and they were approved by Congress. And now DOJ has gone after them as a trust issue. So there is a focus on from our DOJ right now to break up companies that are causing consumers massive issues. Like my friends could go to fly to Seattle, San Francisco to see a concert, and get a 2-night hotel for cheaper than they could see it here in Vegas, same concert, because Ticketmaster pricing and their lock on it. So there's both. There's both are going on right now. So, and by the way, can I handle the quick next transition?
Sure.
So two things we talked about with Google, naming gems something that already is named gems, and the issue of hallucinations are an issue for being in Microsoft right now. So Microsoft is rebranding its AI once again. We do not know to what. It started as Bing Chat, then Copilot, and all its products is called Copilot. And now they're going to change it again. That's a lot of rebranding in less than 2 years.
Well, this is a company that started off as Microsoft Search and then rebranded to Live and then rebranded to Bing, which incidentally, we're going downhill in our rebrands. It made less and less sense every time they did it. And then they introduced the AI feature. And I forget what they originally called it. It was something incredibly
Chat.
silly. What did they call it?
Bing chat.
Bing Chat, okay.
Bing chat.
And
Bing
then
chat.
Bing Chat sounded, I guess, kind of cute and
Sound like a
trite,
big
like.
product. Yeah. Sound like
Until
something
they
doing
introduced, they
search.
made a serious name, Copilot.
Yes. It will co-pilot all your needs across all our products.
And yeah, I don't think people really got behind that name either, or above it, or under it, or around it. And yeah, now they are rebranding. I remember the day when Microsoft was introducing like new operating systems, and they were naming them after ski resorts. There was Whistler, there
Forgot
was
about that.
Blackcomb. Th
Yeah.
this is all their secret names. All
Forgot
their
about
secret
that.
names
Yeah.
involve ski resorts. So look for something like that. They're gonna come up with like some thing that, well off, well paid Pacific Northwest types are into. Maybe the names of sailboats or something.
Maybe, could be.
Yeah.
But the rebranding, we don't know to what yet. It costs millions and millions of dollars to rebrand, so it's a big expense. So hopefully they'll stick with this next one. We'll find out.
Microsoft
And
Catalina.
then under the hallucination issue, there is a reporter in Germany who was accused in Copilot as being a child molester and escapee from a psychiatric institution and a fraudster who plays on widows. The person, the German journalist, was covering those stories. And the large language model associated the stories with the person and said the person did it. And this isn't the first time it happened. This has also happened in ChatGPT, and there's a man suing over a very similar issue. Again, we have the problem with large language models don't read and understand what they're reading. They don't understand context. They use mathematical numbers to associate things, and these got associated with him. in the large language model. And so when you went into Microsoft Copilot, this guy would come up as this horrible, horrible human being when he was just covering stories of other horrible human beings. So hallucinations are really going to be the big, I think, crux of where large language models go, if they can fix it or not. And so far, they can't fix it.
Well, again, this is kind of what I was getting at before when I said information veracity is going to be like a crux of new media literacy. It's
100%. Yeah, 100% agree.
Don't know exactly how to fix for that, except maybe our AIs have to go and perform multiple searches on any given document before serving that document to us. There may well have been other documents that clearly showed this guy has a byline and isn't the headline.
Remember, it's just a mathematical number, so it doesn't know the token, doesn't know the other tokens exist, so it wouldn't know byline, wouldn't necessarily be associated.
No, but again, this is why you get a number of other searches conducted around it and then inspect those results and try to figure it from there. And that might be stepping outside of the LLM model.
Yeah. Like, I am never going to be an NBA basketball player. I'm way too short. I'm much older than they are. And I'm not good at basketball. And there's no way to fix any of that. Maybe I could get better at basketball. I'm never going to be tall.
Has somebody identified Christine Schackinger as a WNBA superstar?
No, but I'm saying that the LLM models, the issues are inherent to the model. They're not a bug that is created out of the model. They're inherent. I am 5'4.5". I will never be much of a basketball player. I tried when I was younger. It's inherent to the model. I'm short and I don't have a big jump. So the model has an inherent problem that it tokenizes everything and it doesn't know the relationships of things. And so it doesn't know that it's putting out 2 R's in strawberry instead of 3. So,
if this was a Disney movie, not only could you be tokenized, you could have a really good coach that would help you overcome these things.
I could have like a magic fairy make me jump 10 foot. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So we should probably get to some Google stuff.
Probably. I bet a lot of people are listening for that stuff, actually. Where do you want to go? You know what really excited me? Actually, can I try the video? The video docs.
Oh.
Well, video SEO. I mean, you remember that day when your video results just disappeared?
This is a long one. I could have gotten through like 4 stories and then done that. Okay, let's do that.
Oh, that was so, a big one. I'm sorry. This was like so meaningful to me when I saw this happen.
So I don't know if you've gotten it yet. Google does this themselves now, and it's terrible because the audio on it never works. It's called a Google Watch page. And the Google Watch page is if you go to click a video from Google search, it opens up this white page background with just the video on it. And then you're supposed to listen to it there, not go to YouTube. The problem is the video audio never works. So then I have to go to YouTube anyways. But if you're trying to figure out what Google's doing, if you can catch this live, you go click on one in Google results and you get this blank whitish page. That's what they're talking about when they're talking about a watch page. So now all your videos have to have a watch page, which means it has to be mostly, the page has to be almost all about that video. Or solely that video. And things that qualify for it are a video landing page, TV episode page, news video page, sports highlight page, and an events clip page. And then the ones that are not, and the video is just complementary to the rest of the page, are blog post page, product pages, video category pages, and movie review pages with embedded movie trailers. So basically, this is one of those things I try to explain to people who hate going to recipe sites because they have to read the backstory of like their grandma came from Germany in 1800s. That was because Google said you had to put content on pages and the recipe sites didn't have the content Google liked. So they created it. Now we're going to have sites are going to have to create individual video pages for all their videos, probably because of some internal issue at Google. And if you want your videos to rank in Google search, you can't just put it on a page with a lot of other content. It has to be about the video.
So I have an e-com client that sells recreational gear, and their audience is really big into videos on how to, you know, set up, use, and work with this recreational gear. And so 3 years ago, one of our strategies was let's just flood. I mean, people are grokking on videos. Let's flood the market with videos. And the staff loved making them. And these videos were incredibly popular. They were on pretty much every product got a video made around it. Even if it was just a how-to video, how do you use this specific component? Here's how you set this up. So some of them were very boring. Some of them were quite fun. All of them took time to create, and all of them were getting a crap ton of traffic, either through YouTube, or they were just being clicked on page. And then one day, and we were able to trace their popularity in Search Console, and then in the video at Search Console, and then one day it all just disappeared. You just saw that the line went the reverse hockey stick; it just went down to nothing. And that was the day that Google changed its ideas, its way of measuring traffic to video. Finally, I mean, at least
At
they've
least
said
you,
something about it.
yeah, at least now you know what to do, because you get those messages like Google is, what is the message specifically? I always forget the wording. Like, your
I think the
video is
message
not
was
the main
screw you and all
content.
that money, I think it
Yeah,
was something like that.
basically. I had a site that lost 80,000 visits based on one video. So yeah, so you're gonna really need to go to the search engine roundtable article by Barry. It's called Google Overhauls Video SEO Docs with More Details. It gives you all the details pretty quickly and succinctly. But if you want your videos to rank at the special little spots in the search engine, of course, everyone does because they often show up at the top of the page, you're going to have to do your videos this way. And I know, honestly, to me, I think it's just silly that you can't just make it the main content above the fold and
Well,
Google be
yeah.
done with it.
I mean,
Yeah.
what this is an evolution of policy that's going to go through another evolution until they actually get it baked right, because this is half baked.
Yeah, and also
Honest
they're
to God,
doing
I
it
mean, it's.
themselves. They're doing it themselves. That's the weird thing. So if you go, like I said, to Google search and you click on a video, you often get this white page that just has the video on it. And I didn't realize at first I wasn't going to YouTube because, like, it's a YouTube video. I was going to this white page and the audio never worked, and it drove me crazy because I'm like, why does the audio never work? And I go back and check my sound settings and blah blah blah. And then I go and it says, click to YouTube, and I go to YouTube. It works fine. And I've written them about it. This has been like for 2 months now, and they don't fix it. So, but if you, but that is what they mean by a watch page, a separate page, which is just basically the video for people to watch. I suggest people maybe just set up a section of their site that's like videos, even especially product videos you want people to see, because they're not going to take it off your product page. That is a no-no now. So take it and leave it on your product page so people who actually go to that page can see the video, but create a separate section of videos, put in a site architecture that makes sense, and just put video watch pages and then link to those from your main page as well.
You can find all this documentation over at Google Search Central, and since Google Search Central, every SEO should be registered and signed up with them. There's a great deal of data and information on virtually everything, which is incidentally where your Gems ex SEO expert is going to be drawing from,
Yes.
no doubt.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah. Whether they
So,
get it right or not is another question, but.
I'm gonna do a quick couple quick stories, and then we can go to one more amazing story. So, Google's testing in your search results on Android's notifications box, and the notifications box is like notifications you get in Android, and it's going to show in search at the top of search. I don't know that this is helpful. I already get those in my email anyway, so it's just a little odd, but you might notice this on your Android that you have a notification from your Android system showing up in your Google search, and it says from your notifications. So strange. And that's all we know about it. It's a little strange.
I have an Android that has so many damn notifications that I don't pay attention to them anymore.
I was at game night one night, and my friend goes, saw my notification stream pop up, and they go, oh my. Who has that many notifications? They go, I do. I said, I get like 100 in every half hour or so. So, and most of
Information
things,
push.
yeah, and most things I can't turn off because there are not everything's important, but something important is in there, and so I have to keep them on. Google's issuing manual actions over Google Discover policy violations. The new one being related to misleading content. We do not allow content that misleads users into engaging with it by promising details that are not reflected in the content. Basically, if you're using clickbaity titles that don't reflect your content, you can get a manual action in Google Discover. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of manual actions in Google Discover before. Apparently, it's not a new thing, but it's
So
just something that's not used
let
often.
me get this straight. Google's gonna go after people for using clickbaity titles for like,
Yes.
getting for getting like discovery traffic.
Yes.
Google, you're gonna have to hire a lot more inspectors. This is gonna take a while.
As long as it doesn't match the content. If it matches the content, then it's okay. Like, 10 million people did this. Oh my God, is okay. But unless in the article it says five people did that, and then
You
not
think
okay.
maybe Google can get a bunch of gem experts to do this for them?
I'm a Gemini expert, Jim. I can see the jingle now.
Oh yeah, I don't want to be watching MSNBC for the next like 2 years just from that quick clip alone. It's terrifying.
You can get a manual actual and discover, and it's there's a set of them. You can see them. And the article from Barry, Google issues manual actions over Google Discover policy violations at Search Engine Roundtable. They list all of them, but the new one is based on misleading content, and we don't allow content that misleads, probably in advance of the election. So if you get a manual action in Google, it acts like a manual action anywhere else, and you have to resolve it to get it back. I don't know that you have to write a reconsideration request. That wasn't mentioned, and regular search you do. So we'll get clarification on that later. So Barry found himself, Barry, who writes all these articles that we love to report on because he does such a good job,
The
Barry
great Barry
Schwartz.
Schwartz.
The great Barry Schwartz has written 45,000 articles. Did you hear, see him post that? Holy cow. I wrote 150 and felt special. So AWS S3, not the current CloudFront, blocked Googlebot from accessing his images. And in Barry's post, images are very important. He does Twitter screenshots and screenshots of information from Google, quotes, things like that. He lost 83% of his impressions. He's now moved to CloudFront in AWS, but he did not get his traffic back even once AWS said they fixed it. So if you're using AWS 3, they have fixed the bug, but you, well, maybe not bug to them. They thought they were doing security. But by blocking Googlebot, ImageBot, which is separate than the regular Googlebot, they cause people to lose their image traffic. So check if you have a big drop and you rely on image traffic over the summer that you did not have this happen. And if you are in AWS 3, you might want to move over to CloudFront just because you may not get all your image traffic back. So, and then at Google wanted to let us know, Martin Split wanted to let us know that sending bad actor traffic to a site doesn't hurt its rankings because you cannot judge who sends traffic. Now, this is not the same as if you're getting a DDoS attack or someone is overwhelming your servers. That can hurt your rankings because Googlebot can't get through.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
But yeah, but this is under what under these like new people in the industry probably don't know kind of thing. So if someone's sending you a whole bunch of traffic, you don't really have to worry about it. But if it's like from China and India and they're not relevant traffic because you're in the US only, because that's where spam bots usually come from, you probably want to block that anyways because they're probably trying to get information from your site for spam purposes. So,
So in
and
this
then,
case, I'm sorry.
no, go ahead.
Well, Google doesn't use user interaction on page as a direct ranking signal. So you could have like 50,000 people show up at your page, and Google's not going to go, "Oh my God, 50,000 people like that. Let's make them number one." It doesn't happen that
Exactly.
way.
Exactly.
I mean, it might influence Google's ideas on how often it should go look at the page, but it doesn't. It's not a direct ranking factor in any way at all because it's so easy
No.
to manipulate.
And also Google knows that bad traffic is bad traffic usually. That's why Cloudflare has all these bot protectors.
This reminds me a lot of what they were doing with links post Penguin, where, we recognize this is bogus, so we're just going to ignore it. Do it all you want. Do it 10 times. We don't
Yeah.
care. Waste all your energy. We don't care. That's
Yeah, we
kind of what
don't
they're
care.
saying,
We
right?
know it's bad. Yeah, we know it's bad. Yeah, definitely. So going on to bad things, the Google Local Maps panel tests expanding in search results. So you click on the map from like the business thing, and then it expands into search results.
And
A
suddenly covers all
problem.
the stuff you're looking at.
Yes, I got it this weekend. I was trying to find the local Costco gas station. I
That's a
put
dumbass. That's a
it's
dumbass UX
it
move.
was horrible. Also, because usually when I'm using my phone in that way, I'm trying to use it quickly. Like, on the phone with a friend, hey, where are we gonna go eat or something like that. And the fact that it not only doesn't it's overlap, but the map when you first hit it redraws itself like with a secondary image. So it's not even like a smooth transition. And then it overlays everything. So you're like, where did the directions go? Where did the addresses go? Where did I'm on my phone, all I have now is a map. And also because I asked about local gas station, Costco near me. Costco gas stations near me. It put every price for gas on every gas station in the vicinity, which is like probably 50 of them. And like, all I wanted is to figure out where a Costco gas station was. And now I have this map that on another map, and I can't see what A and B and C are. And now I have all these gas prices. It's just horrible. It's a terrible experience. Google, if you're listening, do not expand this. It is awful. It would make me actually not use Google Maps in the browser, which I use all the time. I don't like the app. I like it in the browser. So, do you want to go on, or
Yeah,
you want
here's
to?
one. Here's what I think from the new SEOs for chatting file. It used to be, I guess, canon knowledge in the SEO world that you needed to have a minimum of 250 words on the page. And if you went over 3,000, Google would kind of stop caring. That was known by everybody. And it also used to be known that you only wanted to have so many links leading off the page because, if you have more, then Google will look at you funny. And if you have less, Google just won't take you seriously because that was just known.
And that might have been
Because
true at the time because Google was pretty much of an infancy and it had very poor, it didn't have the algorithms it has today. So there might be some truth to that.
you know what, I think the minimum text on a page, 250 words, then Google will actually, maybe will rank that as an article content. That might have been serious, but needing 250 words on a page to get a ranking in general, I think it was
No, that's
always
not.
bogus because maybe you don't need 250 words to describe something.
Yes, that's very true. That's
And so
very true. I
these
work
things,
with a
but I
site
mean,
like
these
that.
were so important for SEOs,
Yes.
and when this would have been so important would have been back in the early 2Ks. We're talking like 2005-ish or earlier, even then. Like beyond after that, Google's much more sophisticated, eh? So I guess recently it's come up again, and John Mueller's had to address it while trying not to roll his eyes too vigorously. And long and short of it, words and links do count, but Google don't count them. It doesn't actually count the number of them.
And what's really important is I do see people on Twitter giving like advice in quotes to people about helpful content. Like, well, you have too few words. I worked on a site that all they reported on was in Hollywood what people wore. And it was a very well-trafficked site, millions and millions of visits. But the articles are very short. It's like they wore this, they wore this, they were at this event. That was it. They ranked perfectly fine because Google wanted to make sure there's an intent match. Not that they cared that they expanded that into a 500, word recipe story, right? So you're 100% right. And so
Grandma
people
did
should,
have to hand stitch that clothing.
they did. But just so people know, this is not related to the helpful content update, the length of content that you have. They want to know if you meet the query, not whether you put in 500 unnecessary words. Something
Where you want
else,
to be?
Google's doing a couple quick, real quick stories. So I know we're getting kind of close to time. Google may now use your OG title for your title links in search snippets. So the OG title you use
Your
for your
open
social
graph.
media, yeah,
Yeah.
this is new. There's like other ones that they've used for a long time: content and title elements, heading elements, content OG title meta tags is the new one. So. You want to just know that if your title is weird in a snippet, it's possibly because your OG title doesn't match your Google title, your title tag on your page. So you want to make sure that they match if that's important to you.
And also, if you find that Google is changing your title snippets, and Google will do this. If it doesn't like the way you've written your title, it'll write the title because it thinks this describes the page better. This may give you an indication of where it's drawing info from besides the body text itself. But it's pretty
That's a
cool
really
that
good
Google's
difference.
identifying this is where we're taking it from.
It is because sometimes they're rewritten very, very badly. Like I had a site that did APIs and they took API out of every title. So at the time,
Sorry, that's funny.
I
That's terrible.
it's terrible. Their rewrites are never good, actually. They're never, ever good. But now you could go check your OG title and see if someone left API out of your OG title. So just make sure you check those. And that's something now I'll make sure to compare. Maybe we can ask our crawling tools if they could ask it, add an OG field for us to look at them together. So moving on real quick to things like it's going to be a weekly thing for us now. New question, why? If Google gets an empty folder, it doesn't generate URLs to crawl in the empty folder. And if it
Well,
gets
there's
a
nothing there
404,
to look at, right?
yeah, exactly. That was a question someone asked John. So we want to report on it because John did answer it and Barry wrote about it. So obviously it seemed important at the time.
If it's
But
an empty.
does Google crawl subfolders in a URL path which don't have pages? Would it be a problem? But there's nothing to crawl in the
There's nothing there.
subfolders.
There's not even a 404 there. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's not even a URL they crawled because a folder
Yeah.
isn't actually a URL. There's
Yeah.
there would have to be an index page that went with that folder to be a URL.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can have a folder URL, but there's no reason for Google to index it if it's empty. There's nothing there. So Google wanted to let you know they don't make up URLs when they crawl your site. This is different, though, than if you have a dynamic site where it can generate URLs through your code, which I had a site that had generated 2 billion URLs off of 2 million products. So these are different things. This is you have an empty folder, and Google cannot index anything, so it's not making up a URL. So they don't try variations of URLs. Another quick thing. Your login page as a site link in Google search results, that can be like hugely important. You have sites that have logins, right? Google, right, Jim? I called you Google. So if you want your login page to show up as a site link in Google search results, those are the links under your main listing, under usually your domain name, like you put in your domain name in search. There's no definite way to do it, Google has said, but if it is important to you, Barry gave a list of some good ideas, like make sure you have a separate login link at the top of your navigation. And then, of course, that page has to be indexable and the link to the login has to be able to be followed, which is what John mentioned as blockers. Also, flat architecture sites where you don't really have a site architecture, we could do a whole hour on why that's not usually a good idea to have a flat architecture site. But those sites have a real issue with site links because Google doesn't have any structure to follow. So it doesn't have any easy way to tell if the link is important. So Google
Only way you can deal with that is content hierarchy, and indicated in your content. But yeah.
Yes. Okay, moving on. Google Ads accidentally released an internal tools button. It doesn't work. It's in the lower left. It's just there. It's a bug and will be going away. But if you see the internal tools button and you can't click it, you're not supposed to be able to click it because you're not supposed to be able to see it.
It's kind of like the AI companion button. Just don't click.
And Zoom, yeah, we have an AI companion button now. And everyone's afraid to touch it until we're done with the show. Google has also updated organization markup search documentation to clarify how images are selected for logos so that if your knowledge graph panel or featured snippet and you're getting the wrong image there, you can read this documentation. It'll help you solve why your particular logo is showing up the way it is. And Google is still delayed on business profile appeals. They're delayed at least 7 days, up to 15 days. They should normally take 5. There isn't a lot of explanation from Google as to why, just that they're fixing the issue, and hopefully it'll be fixed soon. So if you have a Google business profile action against your account, it may take up to 2 to 3 weeks to get that removed in your appeal or to hear back on your appeal.
All the good programmers are fixing the GA bugs.
And then on
have
another
been for
thing,
the last 6 weeks.
Exactly. So many bugs. It seems like you can't get rid of most of your programmers and developers and do just fine, as Twitter and Google are finding out.
When you move your operation to Swampland, you're going to get a lot of mosquitoes. That's the way it goes.
And when you get rid of all your repellents, you're going to get a lot of bites.
Yep.
Google is merging booking and on Google business profiles and local service ads to the same place so that users will be able to do all the booking in one place. It won't be in two different areas anymore. It will roll out in the next 2 weeks and partner migration over the next few months. Do we need to say anything else about that?
Nope. I think it's, we're getting really close to time, so we can't really say much about much of anything.
Well, I think we've covered most everything. Want to make sure people know that there is a WordPress add-on to Elementor, not Elementor itself. It's called JEG, J-E-G. I said that right? J-E-G, mm-hmm. Elementor Kit plugin. Has a XSS bug, which allows people to take over your site completely and upload malicious files. XSS bugs are something that everyone should make sure they check on their WordPress site, because when I check sites, it's one of the most available ways to attack a site, and it's not locked down. So you want to lock down your XSS vulnerabilities. And in this case, you want to update your JEG Elementor Kit plugin immediately to block this vulnerability, because this one will allow them to completely just destroy your site. They'll go hide something in somewhere in the database. You'll spend, the next 2 months trying to figure out how to get your site back. So
you'll be deleting your database before you get your site back is what's going to happen.
Yep. Pretty much. And you want to make sure that you're updating your plugins all the time. Also, a lot of the services now, Insta, WordPress, and WP Engine, a couple of the others, they have automatic updating of plugins. You pay a small fee a year, and they will test the plugins before they roll them out. They can update usually about 90% of the time. Sometimes they run into a little bug and they want you to do it manually so you can check it. But those are great programs. They're worth every penny because as soon as there's a security issue, they patch it and fix it. And so you don't wind up with a site that gets hacked. I know a lot of people, especially Dave, who used to be the other part of the show. I worked with him for a while as a partner. And he had his own hosting and he would spend often hours in the morning, like just fixing what someone attacked. Now with the newer services that weren't available then, they take care of a lot of that for you. So you want to make sure that if you're on WordPress, you're on a managed WordPress host who does things like fix these security issues and update your plugins for you.
Yeah, my host does that for me. They don't do it for free. It's a rather expensive service, but the last time I got hacked, like 7 years ago, it really screwed up my day. So it's worth the $250 or so I'm paying a year just to have this like insurance policy hanging over my head. And it frightens me how many emails I get that say, we patched this problem.
Yeah, it's great. And I use WP Engine. I believe it's $100 a year to do the patching and they patch almost everything. So, and like I said, the only ones they don't is sometimes definitely there's a doing. Conflict. Yeah, totally worth doing. So Jim, I think we did it. I think we made it through all our stories.
We moshed our way through another week of major Google news. Okay, so the core update continues. It's we're 2 weeks in now. It's probably got another 2 weeks to run. If you haven't fallen off the face of the earth, you're probably okay, but anything can happen in the next few weeks. If you've gotten your recovery, congratulations. You can't entirely rest easy, but you can probably feel pretty good. Don't do anything drastic still, no matter where you're sitting. Just keep recording everything, keep studying everything, keep reading forms, and make incremental changes to your content to improve things and make it more useful and helpful for people. But don't make any major changes for the next week or so.
No, don't. And if you lose what you've gained, don't freak out because they pulled back and then regave that traffic again this week. So last week people dropped and most of those people regained it. So they're doing a lot of, I think, things at the same time right now. Sometimes with the rollout, it's the first 2 weeks is pretty much set and done. And last 2 weeks, it's just them refining it. But in this case, they've specifically told us, do not assume anything until it's over. And you can know it's over by going to Google's incident involving ranking report. I don't know why they just don't call it something simple. Or just follow Barry Schwartz on any social media or LinkedIn, and he will announce it as soon as it's over.
You'll know it's over because everyone in the SEO world is going to freak out that it's over. That's how you know it's over. Okay,
that's true.
We got to get our ways out of the studio. So on behalf of Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls, Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, you have been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 29th of August 2024. Friends, honest to goodness, summer is literally almost over. This is the long weekend, so get out there and enjoy it. Special thanks to our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Special thanks to Ricky and Brasco in the studio, and Darren and Brandy in the front office. Biggest love to you all. Have a safe and relaxing long weekend. Be well, be kind to each other, rank well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.